is.
BSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in, hour number three of the program here, and I'll just be fully transparent. I double booked. I'm a clown. I keep a calendar, and I don't know why I didn't, you know, check the calendar when we picked Wednesday to have Corinne Williams come in, but our thanks to Rosemary Gill. She's going to call back at the half hour mark, and we'll talk with her about the Zeiterion Theater, the Zeiterion Performing Arts Center. But right now we're going to be talking about the Capitol Theater with Corinne Williams. And of course, we know you as the executive director of the CEDC, but you're also, of course, the person who is kind of the spokesperson for this project and what's going on with it. So we wanted to have you come in and be able to answer the questions that people have had or address some of the misinformation that's come out about this project.
Sure. That's right, Tim. And I appreciate the offer to come in, the invitation to come in and talk a little bit about this exciting project.
So what is the plan with the Capitol Theater?
Well, we've been under construction almost going on a whole year. We started in earnest in last March, and we've been doing a ton of work, a lot of the work that you don't see from the avenue because it's the inside work. We've been securing the roof, getting the plumbing and the electrical and a lot of the infrastructure to kind of shore up the building and make it possible for the full construction of the project. So we've completed we're close to completion to what we're calling phase one, which was securing the roof and some of the structural aspects of the building. And then we're going out to bid very soon for phase two, which will be the interior reconstruction of the project.
And when it's all said and done, what is the vision of what the Capitol Theater will become?
Well, the vision started with the community, with community members. And we were part of this first iteration of a project called Love the Ave. And we convened a lot of people in the neighborhood to talk about what kind of things they were looking for in the neighborhood. What are the missing pieces? What are the things that could really add some value to the neighborhood? So as a result of a lot of this planning that went on and through developing some great partnerships initially with Whale, who has the expertise around historic preservation, we kind of decided to partner with Whale to develop the vision of a center, a community center that would include our offices and the services that we provide to the community, along with other kinds of things like financial services. For a long time, and if you know your callers will remember, there were probably three or four banks along Acushnet Avenue. There, from Cogswell Street to Nash Road, you could get your banking services. There's none now, but we've entered an agreement with South Coast Federal Credit Union that'll be opening up a small branch there, and we do a lot of work in the as part of the CEDC Community Economic Development to provide financial literacy and financial services like tax preparation as well. So, kind of pulling together that piece of the work. We're also, especially during the pandemic, we've seen where people lack access to health care in many ways, and especially in the neighborhood. There's no primary care where you can really get some consultation and health and basic health care. So we've been in conversation with the New Bedford Health Center around getting a satellite placed in that site. And so that this is sort of the front of the building, mm-hmm. that would be some of those retail spaces, and continuing with, you know, some of the work that we do with small mom and pop businesses, there may be some retail space available for them as well. And then on the upstairs of the building will be 6 affordable apartments. And we know that housing is a huge need in the North End as well as the rest of the city. And so we've been working on creating these 6 affordable apartments. 4 of them are 2 bedrooms and 2 of them are 1 bedroom apartments. And so that's the and believe me, it's a big project and it involves a lot of historic preservation and a lot of moving parts. And it wouldn't be possible without all the teams that have pulled together from, we have an amazing project director, Elizabeth Murphy, who's on board at the CEDC. And then our team at the CEDC who helps us every day to kind of map out the vision, along with our architect studios to sustain, who've been tremendous partners as well, and our contractors, AP Whitaker, who've been hard at work doing all the infrastructure and all the roof, securing the roof and the masonry and all of those, you know, those pieces that pull the project together.
And I would assume that, you know, one of the concerns that people have had is that the cost of this project has increased, that the time of the expected completion of the project has changed, that date has moved. And just looking at it on the surface, my guess, and you can let me know if I'm right or not, is because you are rehabbing a historic building that has had, you know, a lot of vacancy over the years and needs a lot of work done. And you don't know what you don't know when you start rehabbing a building like that.
Right. That's essentially part of the issue. Part of the issue is that the project started and the planning of the project started right at the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so we were, you know, we had some of those delays as a result of the pandemic. But also there was some unforeseen kind of delays that had to do with our funding streams that at one point we were anticipating we were getting funding from HUD. Well, if you get funding from HUD, there's something called choice limiting action, which means you have to have all the financing together before you pick up a hammer. So we were held back because we were waiting for that funding determination. But we kind of, because the building was deteriorating, the roof was open, we said, well, you know what, we're going to have to be aggressive and look for other funding sources. And fortunately, we've received some funding from the state. As a historic preservation project, we've received funds that are historic tax credits, which are very significant because it is a historic building. We've gotten these state and federal tax credits. And of course, the city of New Bedford has supported us generously through the Community Preservation Act that has been an essential partner in this project as well.
Because not only are you preserving a building with history in New Bedford, but you're creating a space that is going to benefit the immediate area around you. And that's what it's focused on. This isn't, and one of the misconceptions that people have about this is that it's going to be some kind of clubhouse where people just come and hang out. That's not what this is about. This is an education and resource center. This is a place where people who live there are going to have access to services that they don't get access to normally without taking a cab, taking a bus, when they're used to being able to walk to all of the things that they need.
Absolutely. And that's what we find in the North End of New Bedford. And we've been around for 27 years as a community development corporation, providing vital programs and services to community members across the city, regardless of, you know, who you are and, you know, any kind of criteria. We serve everyone across the board, and sometimes our programs reach to Fall River and Greater New Bedford, especially our small business support work. But in the North End, we moved down to the North End around the time of the 2010 census, and we started to discover where some of those gaping holes are, where some of those gaps are in those kinds of services. And when we talk about community economic development, it's a little bit different than economic development writ large, because we're starting for where people are at. Mm-hmm. People need to develop workplace skills. They need that kind of training. People who have are entrepreneurs who have a passion for starting up a business is another way of creating value for the neighborhood. So it's not a clubhouse. Every single day, and my team every single day are doing really difficult work. We're interfacing with the IRS every day or the Department of Revenue to troubleshoot issues that come up, or working with health insurance and working around medical bills. So these are nothing like a clubhouse. I really kind of take exception to that kind of characterization of our organization, because we've been working really hard and serving the public for many, many years. So it's not a clubhouse. It's not a hangout space. It's meant to be a place to learn, to build skills, and to create economic value for community members.
Now, and to be fair, there are some, you know, storefronts in downtown areas that are becoming these kind of community hangout spaces. We just had an article about one in Taunton that they're opening up, a center where it's going to be a place where people can come in and they have a coffee shop and people can hang out and they can use it as a workspace and all that. And those spaces, those places serve a great purpose, but that's not what this is. This is a place that's going to have, you know, actual business being conducted every single day.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and there is an aspect of part of the rear space of the theater space that will help to incubate new businesses. So the businesses that are selling food or selling merchandise or items, folks can come in and it'll be like an occasional marketplace where people can come in, and if they want to get a cup of coffee or want to get something to eat, then that might be a possibility as well. So there is, like you said, there is a real need for this idea about third spaces, like people having places to go to be able to meet up with their neighbors. And we've seen the increase of events that are like farmers markets, or some of the work that we do over the summertime, like the Patio de Comidas or the food patio at Riverside Park, are really places where people can get together and meet and mingle and build community. And that's sort of at the core of community development.
And I kind of see it, and this is kind of the vision in my head, and you can tell me if it's kind of the way it might pan out, is like you've got somebody in the community who everybody says, this lady makes the best, you know, donuts anybody's ever had. Mm-hmm. And so now she gets to, beyond just making them for her friends and family out of her own kitchen at her house, she now gets to go in there and use a little bit more of a commercial space to make them, put them in this marketplace, talk to all of you about how she can develop what she has into an actual business for herself and learn the skills and the information that she needs to know. And then maybe she turns that into a food truck for herself. And then maybe that food truck becomes a storefront for her at some point. And it's the idea of kind of incubating and starting and nurturing the idea and showing them, because everybody has an idea to open their own business, but not mm-hmm. everybody has the know-how to be able to do it.
Right, absolutely. Especially food-based businesses are particularly difficult because there's all kinds of regulations around keeping your customers safe for food safety. So having that kind of coaching and that kind of support is tremendously important. And there's different models that are out there. We were really excited to visit Warren, Rhode Island a couple of weeks ago. There's a whole kitchen incubator space that are serving 100 entrepreneurs that are creating their own products and businesses and going out to the market. But at the same time, you do need that piece of the coaching, the technical assistance, sometimes the hand-holding to kind of walk people through all of those different steps.
Because why do so many restaurants fail? It's not because they have bad food.
Right.
It's because the people who are running it are cooks or chefs. They don't know how to run the business side of things.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, you know, somebody might say, well, why are they focusing on restaurants and food services and when there's other industries they could be encouraging? Because that's what works. Mm-hmm. I mean, just listen to our commercials. Listen, see who it is, people that respond to it. It's restaurants and food service are huge in this area.
Right, right. And especially, you know, so like you said, that progression that happens, we've seen it in our very, you know, in front of our eyes in working with this food patio over at Riverside Park. One of the women who started off just selling some of the ice drinks with fruit she ended up opening up her own restaurant on Brock Avenue. She has her own restaurant. Another woman has gone from her her stall at the food patio and now has a food truck. So that progression is really working with that kind of support and the kind of investment that you need to open up a restaurant to get, because a lot of times someone might identify and Ken Raposa, I think he's listening, but he's our champion on technical assistance, having run Naughty Dogs for many, many years. He knows the ins and outs of the restaurant business, but sometimes somebody will find a location and the rehab on being able to get that building up to code to be able to create a commercial kitchen is just so cost prohibitive. Just hoods and ranges and all of those pieces to be able to get your restaurant up to speed is a huge investment, and not everybody has that kind of investment to start off with. So if we can provide that infrastructure to be able to launch those new businesses, that's value add. And a lot of the businesses that we've worked with on Acushnet Avenue, you know, they started as a hole in the wall and became very well known in the neighborhood. And before you know it, some of these restaurant owners or business owners ended up buying the building that they're, you know, taking the next step, expanding their business and opening up a larger restaurant that they've purchased the building. So it's real investment that's happening in the North End. And it's a really important story to really hear about, and how it is a unique place that it's a walkable neighborhood, but at the same time missing some of those pieces. And we're really excited that we've been part of this initiative called the Transformative Development Initiative, that we've partnered with the city and also Mass Development in at the state level to bring investment and attention to the North End and Acushnet Avenue as part of this Love the Ave initiative that has built together these partnerships to be able to create these transformative projects like the Capitol Theater and also the Cape Verdean Association Strand Theater restoration as well.
In 5 to 10 years, those empty storefronts that are along Acushnet Avenue now could all be filled with new businesses. We do have a call. I'm going to take that in 1 minute, but before I do, I want to ask you about the apartments that'll be on the second floor. Mm-hmm. There's some misinformation, speculation going around that's going to be a place where, you know, undocumented immigrants are going to come and live. But what is going to be the process? Those are going to be leased apartments to people, and this is going to be something that there will be a process involved in.
Absolutely, yeah. So again, the type of organization that the CEDC is, we're a community development corporation. That's very well. Those are types of organizations that oftentimes develop affordable housing in local communities as nonprofit organizations. And what we have, we've decided to offer these apartments at 60% of area median income, which means, in a nutshell, and I have a little bit of what that translates to, mm-hmm. And that means apartments that are affordable. Let me see if I can, while I'm talking, I can.
I'll say too, like that the need for that type of housing, as we know, we talked about this earlier this week, that people need to come up with thousands of dollars, almost $10,000 in some cases, to be able to just move into an apartment. And then they've got to worry every month about if they can make that month. That's what people are up against. So there is a need for this affordable housing.
Absolutely. We know that there's a huge shortage of affordable housing, and in a new building that's going to be rehabbed and in good condition. That's what we find a lot of in the neighborhood, that the housing stock is so old that people are overcrowding because of out of necessity. So these are going to be good quality And we're going through a process as property managers of these apartments to vet our tenants. There'll be an application process. There will be, we will be checking references, just like any other apartment, and we'll be managing them in that way. But just to go, just to give, you know, wrap your head around, area median is about $46,000 in for one person household, going up to a four person household, that would be $65,700 for a four person household. So that's where the median is. And for a two bedroom apartment, if we're calculating about 60%, that would be about $878 a month, which is quite reasonable in this housing market.
It's right actually now. About half of what most people are having to pay.
Exactly.
Just to be able to get into a place. And yeah. and by the way, I'll just point out, for those who are worried, oh yeah, they're gonna rent it to the person who checks out and is vetted, but then they're gonna move 15 more people into that apartment. It's gonna be really hard to get away with that kind of thing when your landlords are working downstairs every single day.
Absolutely. We'll be right there on site, and so we'll be able to monitor what's going on in the building. That's been part of our planning, you know, some of the in the weeds that we do every day with this project, that we have to look at security and cameras and entries and, you know, all of the details of the construction. So we've been trying to have some forethought about those kinds of things and to closely monitor the tenants and whoever's in and out of the building, because it is a big building, and we want to keep watch on that.
Let's take this call to wrap things up, and then we'll go to a break, and then Rosemary Gill is going to join us on the other side. Good morning. You are on with Corinne Williams.
Yeah, good morning. It appears to me, madam, that most of the money you're getting is taxpayer money. I'd like to know how much you're getting private donations, if you're taking out bank loans. And the other question is, if this building is up and running, you're going to pay taxes to the city of New Bedford for police, fire, and EMS?
Yes,
can you please answer those questions?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We are paying taxes currently for the part of the building that was occupied prior to our construction. And when we are occupying the building, the parts of the building that are not occupied by a nonprofit, including the apartments, will be taxed. So we will be paying property tax, as we have been since we've taken ownership of the building. And it's not uncommon for any of the construction, if you examine any of the current construction that's going on in the downtown area right now, in any of either private or nonprofit kind of housing development that you're seeing, public money is being poured into these investments. And that's just a reality. Are we raising money from private donations? Our whole organization runs a good deal on foundations and private money that have helped to create the CEDC and keeps us running every single year. So we're no stranger to private funding and a capital campaign that we're reaching out to all of these private partners. And on top of it, we're also having to borrow money as well. We couldn't float all of the construction without having some being able to borrow some money. Part of our asbestos removal, we took out hazardous waste out of the building, and we've had to borrow money that's gone beyond some of the public money that has helped us to remediate some of the hazardous waste as well. But down the line, we will be carrying a mortgage on the property as well.
Well, we'd like to have you come back in on a regular basis and give us updates and keep people abreast of everything that's going on, so that we can quash some of the rumors and speculation about what's been happening over there. And I think the biggest problem, Corinne, is that the reason why people don't understand it is because they've never seen it before. Like, this is going to be something that's new and innovative. And once they see it in action and they realize what it's going to do, you're going to start to see more of these pop up in other neighborhoods.
Yes.
I hope.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Tim, and happy to come back anytime.
And if people do have questions in the meantime, how can they reach out to you?
They can give me a call at 508-979-4684 at the CEDC.
All right. This is going to be a continuing conversation in the coming weeks and months, and hopefully not too much longer than that, and you guys can get it all up and running relatively soon.
Yes, thanks.
All right. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be joined by Rosemary Gill from the Zeitarian Performing Arts Center to get an update on everything going on over there as well. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back in. We are joined now by Rosemary Gill, the Executive Director of the Zeitarian Performing Arts Center. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
And thanks for being understanding of my boneheadedness here, double booking, because I was just thinking to myself, I was like, oh, no, Wednesday's open. And this was one of the times that we had you scheduled to come on a Wednesday. So my fault completely.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
Well, how are things going over there? I was down in the area the other day, and I was just envisioning what it's going to be like, you know, when the grand opening happens and we're all able to get back down there again. But it seems like things are progressing.
Well, you and a whole lot of folks, we're all envisioning what it's going to be like. Super exciting. Things are going very, very well. We're on schedule. If folks haven't heard, we broke ground this past summer. And our wonderful general contractor, Colantonio, is moving along really, you know, really quickly, tackling every challenge, with ease, really, and things are very, very exciting.
And I'm sure, you know, this time of year, there'll be times when work slows down and the wintertime is a tough time to be able to get the materials that people need and to be able to actually be able to get out and do the work that needs to get done. Do you anticipate that there'll be any kind of slowdown in the winter months here?
You know, it's actually the opposite, because what we're finding is... like the subcontractors, maybe like a mason or someone like that who may work outdoors quite a bit, is looking to get out of the weather. And so they're getting things done in our building. So it actually, the bad weather has worked to our advantage.
So there's probably,
for the moment.
I was going to say, there's probably multiple things going on at one time with all the great renovations and upgrades that are going to be made. But kind of, what are some of the things that are being specifically worked on now?
Oh, everything is. It is. It's all happening at the same time. Multiple floors. You know, we are touching all four floors of the building, and so in addition to the restoration in the theater itself. Which is incredible. To see what's happening in there is just mind blowing. But in addition to that, we are renovating the four floors on kind of the front of the house, so to speak. So from the basement all the way up to the third floor, we've completed all of the demolition, that phase, and they're starting to rebuild and put things in, like a brand new elevator and all of the new flooring and new walls. And that is all being addressed right now, while in the theater, they're working on, they put in a brand new orchestra pit that will have a hydraulic lift, which will enable it to move to like four different points in the theater, up and down, obviously. And they're digging trenches and tunnels right now in the theater to accommodate for the HVAC systems, the heating, the ventilation and air conditioning systems that need to go in the theater, as well as all of the wiring and cabling for IT and sound and lighting. So it's all happening at the same time. It's amazing.
Yeah, because as much as there's going to be a physical renovation and physical upgrades that people are going to be able to see, there's also going to be those technological upgrades that they're going to be able to hear and feel as part of this this new Zeitarian going forward.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's some of our biggest motivation for doing the project. We initially started this to improve the patron experience. So we were looking at renovating and bringing in new seats and renovating the bathrooms and addressing the sound issues. And then that eventually grew to be the huge project that it is now. That's incredibly exciting.
I mean, I remember taking the tour when before everything closed down and learning that for a lot of performances, you were utilizing speakers that were from the 1920s. And that was just amazing to me that you were still utilizing that same equipment, because I know I have speakers from the 1970s that are hard to keep running.
Yeah, well, we rented a lot of, you know, for bigger shows, we always rented speakers. For something that didn't require a heavy lift, we would use the speakers that were in existence. But I'm not sure that that's actually true about the 1920s speakers. But
well, still, you've got a lot of things in there. And as somebody who loves the place so much and spends so much time there, I'm sure it was a little bit of it's a bittersweet thing to see as they're breaking things down in order to rebuild them. But the idea and the focus is on being able to, you know, restore the aspects that are historic and also make these upgrades in a way that fits in with the aesthetic that people have come to know and love.
Yeah, it was a little jarring. I have to admit that. Excuse me. Dealing with a little bit of a cold, so my voice is kind of funky. But, I've been working at the V since 2007, and we've been talking about and working on this project since 2018. So when we kind of broke ground last summer, it to see everything getting dug up and
Hold on, let me go back to that. Sorry, there we go.
It was very exciting.
And now that you are starting to see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, both physically and metaphorically, starting to envision what these performances are going to be like. But I also want to make it a point that people understand, just because the theater itself is not open, that doesn't mean that there aren't shows and events that are happening.
Yeah, so we are taking a little bit of a break from shows right now, but we still support our resident companies, New Bedford Symphony Orchestra and New Bedford Festival Theater, and their production needs and box office and ticketing and all of that, which keeps us busy. We're doing a lot of community programming and activities and supporting a lot of the organizations and partners that we have in New Bedford and in the South Coast. So we're busy. We have a brand new strategic plan that we're working on the implementation and all of the tactics and strategies we need to ensure that we fulfill our promise there. And we are getting ready to open this new building. So all of the logistics and training and et cetera that we'll need, because, you know, we're going to have new spaces. We'll have the new speakeasy in the basement, which will be wonderful. For the first time ever, we'll have dedicated education space, so a movement studio and classrooms. And that takes a lot of planning and work. And so, you know, my team is very, very busy, and we're excited and really looking forward to welcoming people back to not only a brand new space, but really an organization that will be changed from the inside as well as the outside, you know, very welcoming and embracing everyone and looking at things in a whole new light.
And before we let you go, I got to ask you, with all of the work that's being done, have you happened upon anything that you didn't expect to find? You know, maybe some lost artifact or something from a time gone past that you didn't think you'd come across?
You know, everyone asks that, but we haven't. And we thought we might find something behind a wall or, you know, buried underneath. For the most part, the things that we're finding are unfortunate, like, you know, major cracks in pipes that are, that we need. So, and that we have to replace and, ledge and things like that are unfortunate and delaying us a little bit, but, no, we haven't found any major artifact or even small artifact. So that's unfortunate that we won't have that kind of story, but, you know, it's still really, really fun, very, very interesting project. And if I do want to mention that our website has all kinds of information about the project. We're posting photos and updates. We're providing opportunity for those who may want to partner with us as we're raising the last funds to kind of bring this to reality. And people can find all of that on our website at Zeiterium.org.
Yes, absolutely. And certainly you can keep up to date with everything there. And we'll keep up to date with everything with you having coming back regularly here on the program to keep us updated. But everything seems on schedule. We're looking at the same timeline for a completed date.
Yeah, we are. We're on schedule. It's been, you know, a few hiccups here and there that we thought might factor into our timeline. But so far, so good. I'm knocking on wood. Think we're staying on track. We've been able to make up time. So we're looking at, you know, completing the project towards the end of this year and welcoming people for sure at the beginning of 2026, if not sooner.
The theater gods are smiling down and making sure that everything stays on pace.
Oh, I hope so.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Rosemary, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Tim. Have a great day.
You as well. That is Rosemary Gill of the Zeiterium Performing Arts Center, and we are going to keep up to date with everything that's going on there because it's your theater. It's your theater, New Bedford. You're the ones that make it as great as it is, and so we want to make sure that you stay up to date. I'm going to take a break here. We'll be back in just a few moments. 508-996-0500. Welcome back in. Let's take a phone call, 508-996-0500. Good morning. You are next on WBSM. Oh, well, that was odd. Waited on all that time until then when I went to them, they weren't there. Well, it happens. Call back, 508-996-0500. We also got some app chat messages that have been coming in over the last few minutes. So let me refresh that screen again and make sure we got them all. And also, I'm still getting some responses on the question that we asked today based on Jackson's article at fun107.com and on WBSM.com about remembering his time working at Sunbeam Bread in New Bedford. And I'm asking, what are some of the memorable smells that you remember from across the South Coast or even can still experience now? And we're getting some pretty fun answers to that. The peanut store is becoming a frequent answer. And I can only imagine how good that must have smelled to have that down there. Patrick says Silmo syrup on Cove Road. More people saying low tide in the harbor. Nursing home septic being pumped. I used to work at one. Route 18 in the summer when the fish plant was where the hotel is now. On hot and humid days on the South Coast, cities smell like driving through a medicinal use packed bong the past few years. Well, that's I mean, I would agree. You smell a lot of that. I guess the caller dropped off again. So one of the other ways that you can send in things is via the app chat. We've gotten a little bit of stuff that's come in on that as well. And you can always send app chat messages or record open line voicemails on the WBSM app. And it's really easy. You can do that any time of day. And one of the things that I'm asking is if this week, if you can just take a few moments, doesn't have to be now, doesn't have to be during the show, but just send an open line voicemail on the WBSM app. Tell me who you are, where you're from, how you listen, and why you like to listen. So, you know, something like, hi, this is Tim. I'm from Fairhaven. I listen on the WBSM app every day because I really love when Barry's hammering home and telling everybody exactly what the Democrats are doing wrong. That's how you know that I just made that up and that's not a real example because you know that I'm like, the Democrats are doing just fine, Barry. But, you know, leave me a message like that, and then I'm going to take everybody that sends in one of those messages, and I'm going to take all their names, and I'm going to enter them into a drawing to win a Seize the Deal certificate. So that's it. That's all you got to do is send that in, and you'll be entered to win that way. And don't forget, too, you can also enter to win on the app and on the website tickets to see Sarah Silverman at the Vets in Providence. It's happening next Thursday. We're going to be giving away those tickets brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Here in Fairhaven, the home of the Purple Dot, where you can try before you buy. We also have the link up now where you can also enter to win a free solar system from Isaacson Solar. They're giving away a free solar system to one lucky entrant, and they'll come in and put in all the solar panels and everything for you free of charge. And we're saying that that's the biggest thing we've ever given away because the lifetime savings for you on your electric bill with that free solar could be well over $100,000. So this is even bigger than giving away a car, giving away a trip to Disney World, anything that we've ever given away on the radio. So you want to enter to win that? You can do so by going to isaacsonsolar.com, and there's an easy link to that right at wbsm.com as well. Let me take the final break of the morning, and we will be right back. Of course, that is Big Time by Peter Gabriel, and we've got Big Time Brian Thomas coming in. I don't know if that's actually a nickname for him. I'm just making that up. But we got Brian Thomas coming in for Chris McCarthy. Chris is, he's got a cold, and the cold is taking away his voice again. We're all going through it. You know, there's going to be days when we're fighting to be able to get on the air. There might be some days where we can't go on the air and somebody's got to fill in because these colds are, they're hitting our vocal cords. And no matter what we do to Lysol the place and sanitize the place, we're just in close contact all the time. We're talking in the same microphone. And so we're bound to get it from each other, and we're bound to get those scratchy voices. We were talking earlier about the cable bill and Nesson. DSY says his bill went up $16 a month starting this month. So there you go. There's one person. I mean, some people are paying $60 more to get Nesson. Let's take a phone call here in the final moment that we have. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Crawford Bread on Water Street.
Crawford Bread?
Crawford.
Oh.
The rye bread was incredible.
Oh, you can't get a nice fresh baked rye anymore anywhere.
Yeah, I know. And I'm telling you, we would get it warm and go home and put butter on it, and that was dinner.
So if you like fresh baked rye and you want to get a good one, I don't know, you know, if you ever make it over to Pawtucket, Rhode Island, but there's a Jewish deli in Pawtucket that opened up last year or the year before called Maven's Delicatessen. And they make their own rye bread because they couldn't get it anywhere else. So they just make it themselves.
Yeah, dark rye.
Yeah. And that's the best bread, in my opinion.
And the other place was there was another place on County Street. I think it was Sunrise Bakery. And I used to go to the St. Martin's Dances. And I think they let out at 10 o'clock. And I would go to that place, and I'd get the Portuguese pops.
Oh, those are the best, especially when they're fresh out of the oven.
And interestingly enough, I had to bring them home and get them home warm. And I had to run, literally, about a mile and a half, 2 miles.
That well, and you probably got them there in time or they were still warm.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for sharing. You have a great day.
All right, thank you. Right, bye-bye.
And we can continue this discussion tomorrow if you want to send me some more of the best smells that you remember.